Welcome to episode 128.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 128 of Road Trekking, the RV Lifestyle Podcast. Hey, it doesn't make any difference what kind of an RV you have, whether it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent. Hey, even if you don't have a road trek or any kind of a RV yet, or you're just dreaming maybe about getting one someday, this show is for you because here we talk about being out there. Outside, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting fun and interesting people, boondocking, discovering new places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV lifestyle. So you are most welcome here, and we're honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Well, this episode being released on February 22nd, 2017. Man, it is warm. Have you been following the weather forecasts around the country? Amazing warm weather. It was like this, I think, about 5 years ago. I remember when we first bought our RV, it was like 70 degrees in March up in Michigan. And I said, hey, this is going to be great. And it was, and it still is. But it's been that way even in February. Temperatures in the 70s in places that normally have snow on the ground at this time of year. Amazing. But anyway, with that warmer weather, we're going to be spending a lot more time outdoors, it looks like, this season. It's going to be one of those years. And with that, that means more exposure to a tiny creature that poses really big problems. And I'm talking about ticks. And you know what a tick is? It's a biting, blood-sucking little bug, not much bigger than a pinhead, but they are nothing to take lightly. Ticks are everywhere. Epidemic infestations across North America now, increasing in numbers. And now with that, they are spreading a terrible illness called Lyme disease. Now, you really need to listen to our interview of the week this week. We'll talk to a top expert on tick infestation and Lyme disease. It's a very real threat. If you are an RVer who spends a lot of time outdoors, listen to this episode and take to heart all of the advice that you'll be getting. But right now, I want to bring on my bride, my lifelong traveling companion, Jennifer. Hello, my dear.
Hello, Michael.
We are coming to you from our Florida headquarters here on the Emerald Coast, looking at a very riled up Gulf of Mexico right now out our window. It's pretty wavy out there.
I love the waves.
Yeah, I do too. Something, I just stare at them.
Well, I'm from Michigan. I'm used to the big waves.
Yeah, on the big Great Lakes. Well, down here in the Gulf of Mexico, they're pretty big too.
And they're beautiful.
We had a lot of fun. We hit the road last week. Actually, right after we recorded the last week's episode, our Valentine's Day episode, we hit the road, and here we are down in Florida now. We had a couple of vlog reports, vlog being video blog, and you can see those at roadtrekking.com. That was fun. We found some fun things to do on the way down.
It was fun.
And let's see, we just spent a great weekend, and we have a post up on the blog. We found another subgroup of RVers. Everybody has, of course, everybody knows spring training for the Major League Baseball teams is underway in the Grapefruit League here in the Florida area, and then of course over in Arizona as well. There's a bunch of spring training. RVers always show up to those, but we found another group of RVers following not the boys of spring, but the little boys of spring and summer. Our little grandson's 11-year-old traveling baseball team. We found a whole bunch of RVers who come out and follow those teams around all summer long, use them for tailgating, spend the night in them, give the kids a place to break, the adults a place to chill out. It was really fun.
Yeah, I think you probably put that on the map.
Yeah,
you won't be able to get back in there again.
Yeah, we found a baseball complex, an athletic field in Marianna, Florida, that has put in, they realized that there's a lot of RVers who follow those traveling teams around. So they put in a full-fledged RV park with hookups, and we had a great time. That was really fun. If you didn't see that, you can find that. Let's look at the Road Trekking, R-O-A-D-T-R-E-K-I-N-G blog. And we've got a story and some pictures up on that. That was fun. Let's see what else. Oh, this weekend we're off again. We're off to the Gulf Coast to go celebrate Mardi Gras parades.
And that will be a good time.
Everybody thinks that Mardi Gras is New Orleans, but it's really not. New Orleans is probably the most decadent of them all, but Mardi Gras parades really are pretty family-friendly, and they really began in Mobile, Alabama, and the little communities along there. Even here where we are now near Destin, Florida, they've got a Mardi Gras parade this weekend. We're going to be near Pascagoula and having some fun, smoking on the Bayou 3. It's the third annual gathering from our friend Pogo, so I'm looking forward to that.
Why hasn't he had more than three?
This is the third one. He missed one year.
He couldn't do it.
So third year. A bunch of people are road trekking family is coming from all across the country to that. So let's see what else. Oh, and then we got the big mystery. My creeping crud.
You have either poison ivy, poison oak, or something else.
This was weird, just really weird. I didn't wake up. I looked up my arm about 11 o'clock Saturday afternoon, and there was this big bump and rash that was spreading up my arm.
The size of a silver dollar?
Yeah, I thought it was a spider bite. We ended up... because of the way it was spreading and looking so big that I went to the local ER hospital. They didn't know what it was. And then from there, we went to, ended up to a dermatologist yesterday, and they don't know whether it's poison oak, poison ivy, or shingles. So we did a biopsy. They actually sliced a bunch of one of the blisters off, and we're waiting. I think it's going to be a great blog post, don't you think?
Well, you want to know what you have.
Yeah, I don't know. That isn't very painful. It doesn't really itch a lot.
Well, it looks better today.
Yeah. Well, it's a great mystery, and I'll let you know what it is. The suspect is Bo. Bo is the chief suspect. I take Bo to a dog park every place we go, and I think Saturday I took him to a dog park, and my suspicion is that he got in to some poison ivy or poison oak, and then when I was sort of wiping him off, so I could bring him home clean for you, I got it on me. And that's
my
suspicion.
It sure is a costly little adventure to the dog park, if that's what it is.
Yeah. We've got
the emergency room.
Emergency room, all the meds,
and
pills, ointments, and the great mystery. But anyway, it's going to be interesting to figure out what it was, and I'll find out. If it's poison oak, poison ivy, I'll do a whole guide on it and how you can... avoid it. But, you know, that kind of ties in with what we're talking about with ticks in our episode today, that ticks are just a huge problem.
They are everywhere. It used to be in our part of the state of Michigan, we didn't have them, and now we do.
Where was it that we were just walking and not even on a paved path, and we ended up with ticks all over us? Where was that?
Massachusetts.
Oh, Cape Cod. Yeah. Yeah, that was, and that used to be the worst area in the country, and now they're spread everywhere. I think we had an RV story the other day that the ticks are infested throughout all of our national parks now. So,
oh, you can't go anywhere.
Well, you got to be careful. You got to check yourself for ticks at the end of the day, whenever you come inside, and we'll have a great interview with a top expert on that. So that's coming up a little later on. We got a fun off the beaten path report and much, much more. So. Going to be a great show. Meantime, though, I think isn't it pretty much time for you to get to work?
I think it is.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
We've talked before about a great product called Reflectix, an insulating product that comes in rolls and can be easily cut to fit inside and around your RV windows. Most recently, we used it on a winter camping trip in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, and it did a great job in keeping our Road Trek motorhome warm by preventing the inside heat from escaping through the windows. But you can also use Reflectix in the summer to keep your air-conditioned coolness in and that outside heat out. Here's a reader's tip.
Hi, Mike. Regarding the use of Reflectix, as you have in your video on the website, it's great in the wintertime to help keep your RV warm. You put it on the inside as a press fit, but it's also great on the outside in the summertime because then it won't heat up the window or dissolve the glue or anything like that. And I've found that sticky Velcro is a good way to do that. You can put it on the south side of your RV or the west side. And if you put it around all your windows, you have your choice. It also means that you don't have to press fit. You can have the full width of the Reflectrix covering your windows and keeping your RV cooler than it would otherwise be. Thanks. This is Tom from Ottawa.
Great tip, Tom. Thanks. Again, in the summer, the Reflectrix should be applied on the outside of the window, not the inside. Don't put inside the window because it would reflect too much heat onto the window and could damage the glass. Mount it outside with stick-on Velcro, just as Tom suggests. And be sure to send me your tips and suggestions for the RV lifestyle. You can use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. Just click it and then use the built-in microphone on your computer or mobile device to record a message to me. You can do it over and over as many times as you want until you're satisfied. And then you just click a button and it comes right to my email inbox.
Jennifer's tip of the week is brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, R-A-D Power, P-O-W-E-R, Bikes, B-I-K-E-S, all one word, radpowerbikes.com, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes, now with free shipping. Now, here's the thing, Rad Power Bikes offers three different e-bike models that fit a wide variety of rider wants and needs. All three of these models can reach 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling, and they will give you the choice to ride pedal-free with throttle, or you can utilize five different levels of pedal assist for an added boost, or you can combine them. It's perfect for people who want to get back into riding. They're recovering maybe from surgery or injury, or maybe you're just looking for a little extra boost to keep up with friends and family around the campground. Riders can travel between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. They are priced at less than half that oftentimes of comparable bikes on the market, because with radpowerbikes.com, that dealer retail markup is cut out. You're dealing directly with the manufacturer. Now, if you mention Road Trekking at your checkout, you'll get an extra $75 off. Plus, you get free shipping on all of their e-bike models. Check it out yourself, radpowerbikes.com.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of Road Trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hi, Mike. I want to know how to get rid of the air in our water line. We have a Road Trek Agile. We cleaned out the water system just a few weeks ago, and since then it's been making noise on its own, and so we want to get that air out of there. Can you help us?
Well, I think so. A couple of things happen. One, you had all the water out and then you put some in, and then, as you said, some air gets in the lines. What you need to do is make sure you have a lot of water in your freshwater tanks, and then just run it. Just open up your water, your water spigots in the bathroom and in the galley, and run the water. Run cold and hot water, and it'll go a little spurt and sput for a little bit, and then all you have to do is wait until it stops doing that. All the water will get, the water will flow through those pipes and push out the air. Now, another easier way to do it is if you're in a campground and you are at a place where you can have city water hookups, just hook up that city water, do the same thing. You'll get some spurting and some sputting, and you know how water tanks are, and then it'll just start to flow smooth, and you should be all set. Sometimes if you don't have enough water in the freshwater tanks, that water pump will kind of go on and off and on and off, and if there's not a lot of water in there, it isn't enough to push out those air pockets. So you want to make sure you have plenty. I just use the freshwater tank, and I use that and push that through, and that works out great. But that's great. Somebody's unwinterizing And it's still February. That is a really good deal. So that should be great. Hope that helps you out. Let's go to Bill. Bill is about ready to head south, and he was watching on the roadtrekking.com blog the other day, and he saw our trip to through Nashville, where Jennifer did a little stand-up and said how we try and time it so we miss rush hour. And Bill has a question, and maybe I'll give you a chance to get a couple of tips here.
Hi, Mike. I was watching your V-blog, day two, and Jennifer was talking about going through Nashville and the admonition, don't go through it during rush hour. We're going to be headed down to Gulf Shores to the Gulf State Campground in Gulf Shores next week, and we'll be going through Nashville. And I wondered if you had any tips. I didn't know if you went through Nashville, if you took the outer belt, or if you'd ever taken 31 to 109 to 840. Any bits of wisdom would be helpful. Again, love your shows, your V-blog, and hope you're enjoying Florida. Thanks.
Well, we'll be right near you there as we pass through Gulf Shores as well on the Alabama coast. Well, Bill, we always use the GPS when we're going through a big city because they know the best route. And I do not want to get stuck on side streets in a big city, particularly at rush hour.
That's true. And they know if there's traffic accidents, construction, whatever's going on, it lets us know. And so our GPS is what we use.
Now, if you're really familiar with an area, well, and if you're brave, go ahead, venture out, take those side streets. Not me. Not me. We did that. The last time I did that was when we were taking Route 66, and we wanted to start it south of Chicago, and that was a mess. Just nothing but snarled traffic and side streets. And if I had just stayed on the GPS suggested route, I would have plugged right into where 66 starts, and it would have been great. So, and it's the same whenever we go through a big city: Atlanta, Louisville, Knoxville, Nashville, Denver, Detroit, Chicago. We follow the main GPS route that gets us through, because it gets us through the city the fastest. Now, I do listen to my GPS. My GPS on our Road Trek CS Adventurous XL lets us know if there's traffic, construction delays, or an accident, and we follow that. But it always will then give you an alternate route, and that helps a lot. But I would not recommend trying to vector yourself around. You just don't know what you're going to get, and the traffic's not going to be good. That said, always time it, as Jennifer said in that little video blog we did. We try and time it so it's not during rush hour.
We try to hit lunchtime, or we just try to space it out as much as we can, plan ahead what big cities are we going to be going through and at what time. Maybe we'll have dinner early, dinner late. Yeah. We'll stop and see something. You just try to avoid the rush hours.
If we're going north and say we're going through Nashville and we want to spend the night on the north side of Nashville so that in the morning we don't get up and take the rush hour that as everybody's going into the city. In other words, you're always trying to time yourself so you're against the rush hour, and you can do that yourself. But I would just follow the route and go right like that. All right, one more call from one of our listeners this week.
Hi, Mike. This is Bob Frechette. I'm currently with my wife, Bonnie, and Tucson, Arizona. We've been full-timers for about a year now. We have a Class A motorhome that we live in. I've heard you mention on your podcast that you're a ham radio operator. I'm currently taking classes to get my ham radio license, and we'll have that in a few weeks. I was wondering if you would maybe do an interview or a podcast sometime on ham radios and the RV lifestyle. I think that'd be very interesting to me and probably to a lot of others. I'd appreciate you thinking about it, and if you can do it, I'd love to listen to it. We really enjoy listening to all your podcasts. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Bob. I don't think I've ever done one on ham radio. I've talked about it, but I've never done a podcast on it. I don't know if there's enough interest in it. I mean, honest to goodness, it's, you know, with the internet, ham radio has really fallen on... there's very little activity. I have a ham radio in our road truck. I have it for 5 years, and I don't think I've ever had a contact with it. There's nobody there. There's just nobody there. So I listen to all of the 2-meter repeaters throughout the country, and I'll go on to some of them. But it's just not very practical for driving around. Now, if I was alone traveling, I would maybe have an HF rig in there. The problem I have with HF is high frequency, long distance communications, whereas when I say 2 meters, that's VHF or very high frequency, and that's generally line of sight. And there's a network of ham radio repeaters that work like cell phone towers. But, I like the hobby. I love the hobby. Been in it since I was a teenager, but it's just not very active as it used to be. You've watched me come and go through that hobby, and it's just not very active.
You're not even using your ham radio at home the way you used to, but I think Bo kind of changed those dynamics.
Yeah, well, Bo the dog, I've got Bo duty every day, so he doesn't give me much free time. But I did a column on RVing, and it's a very robust ham radio community that are RVers, and they are typically Class A RVers who are in, they'll be in a fixed location at a campground for maybe during the summer. And I did, if you can get to the Family Motor Coach Association archives, if you're a member of that in Family Motor Coaching Magazine, 2 or 3 years ago, I did a whole column on, they have a very active ham radio chapter and many people around the country. They even have a network where they all are on and talking. Not that many are in Class B motorhomes, which is what Jennifer and I are in. And one of the reasons is there's a lot of interference with our solar and our inverter, a lot of what they call RFI, radio frequency interference. It's just very noisy on the radios. When you stop in a campground and hook up, it's pretty good. I used mine a lot last year in national parks. It was kind of a competition to put national parks on the air. But in terms of everyday use, Bob, I don't use it that much, and I find it there's not a lot of activity. Now, I'm sure as soon as I say that, somebody's going to say, oh, there's a heck of a lot. Well, I sure haven't heard it, and I'm on the road more than half the year, and it's just not out there. When you're set at a campground, that's great. And if you want to do some hobby stuff, like go up on a mountaintop and see if you can make contacts, that's always fun. And it's a great thing to have. I keep it primarily for emergency communications. Should the cell network go down or I'm someplace where I don't have a cell signal, I always can get a radio signal. But fortunately, I haven't needed that. Hey, I hope that helps answer some of your questions. And good for you, Bob. 73. And good luck. It's Ham Talk for best regards. Sponsoring this part of the podcast is Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, here's three dealerships who bring you a very large inventory of Class Bs from three different locations around the country. If you are in the market for a Class B, you know how high they are in demand, and that's why you want to check in with these dealers. VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, and WagonTrailRV.com. Three dealers. They have right now on their lots all sorts of road treks, pleasure ways, leisure travel vans, Class B, B pluses, other small motorhomes. Here's Dan, the van man, and Dan is going to update us on some of the things they've got going on this week.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we got a great deal this week on a 2016 Leisure Travel Unity corner bed model, only 14,000 miles with a diesel generator. You can check that out at VanCityRV.com. Also, we have some great deals on leftover 2016 models. You can give us a call at 1-800-467-3905 and get the best deal possible.
They say every dog has its day. In this part of the podcast, it's time for tips, resources, and travel advice about bringing pets on our RV adventures.
What could be worse than losing your pet while on an RV trip? It happens, and it happens much too often. Our pets can be stressed and confused in new environments and be frightened by those unfamiliar surroundings. Do you know that lack of identification means as few as 14% of pets ever find their way home after getting lost? So for starters, always have your pets wear a collar with ID. Our Bo has his name and our phone number engraved on his collar. We don't have to worry about a metal tag getting snagged and falling off. But there's even a better way. Microchipping. about the size of a rice grain. A microchip is inserted under the skin in less than a second. It needs no battery and can be scanned by a vet or an animal control officer in seconds. If your pet gets lost and is taken to a vet clinic or animal shelter, your pet will be scanned for a microchip to reveal his unique ID number. That number will be called into the pet recovery service, and you will be contacted using the contact information on file with your pet's microchip. The average cost to have a microchip implanted by a veterinarian is around $45, which is a one-time fee and often includes registration in a pet recovery database. The American Humane Society estimates that one in three pets will become lost at some point during their life. Having your pet microchip provides peace of mind that your beloved companion will never wander unknown.
That's a great tip. Great tip. That's pretty stunning statistics. Only 14% ever get home after getting lost.
That's really sad.
That is really sad.
They would be so upset because they're so dependent upon you.
Yeah, they really are. Hey, well, this part of the podcast is brought to you. That's a great tip. Pet owners, pay attention. Brought to you by Dozers Dental. Choose an all-natural and healthy treat your dog will love. It's available direct through Amazon, or you can find out more about Dozers Dental Chews at roadtrekking.com/dozers, spelled D-O-Z-E-R-S. Bo is the favorite dog at the campgrounds when there's other dogs around, because the folks at Dozers have given us a pretty good supply of them, and Bo passes them out to his dog buddies, and every one of them loves Dozers. Dozers are all natural. They're gluten-free.
It was very funny this past weekend because our neighbors said that his dog was fussy over what she liked to eat.
Yeah.
And not to be offended if she wouldn't eat a Dozer. She ate one, and then she proceeded to follow you around and dump Bo.
You dumped Bo like crazy, but she knew
Bo. I think she liked him.
She did like Bo. Bo had a girlfriend. Bo uses Dozers to get his girlfriends. But every dog at the dog park here in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, we've got a friend named Winnie, a big Mastiff, and I've got a size of the giant-sized Dozers, and Winnie loves those things. Every dog we've met loves these things. As I said, they're all natural, and they're gluten-free. They're low in fat, no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, no artificial preservations. Now, here's the thing. They're made in the USA, and I'll tell you why that is important. If you've read about pet recalls, pet food recalls, pet treat recalls, you'll see that a lot of stuff that is sold in pet stores over the counter is made in China or made overseas, and there have been a lot of problems. Dozers is all natural. It is healthy. And it cleans the dog's teeth, it reduces plaque, it freshens their breath. It's different than other dental chews because it's soft, and so the chewed pieces will mold around, get in between the teeth, and then effectively remove plaque and all that stuff. But you can put other stuff in them. There's little kind of hollow pockets there if you want to put things like peanut butter in. We just give them just as they are to Bo. And he even knows what the word is. He loves Dozers. You need to try them out. They come in different sizes. They got them for little tiny dogs up to great big dogs. They're available at Amazon. Or if you want to go to roadtrekking.com/dozers, D-O-Z-E-R-S. I've built in a link there, and you can check them out for yourself. Dozers, your dog will thank you. All right. Well, Jennifer and I have talked a lot over the past few years about ticks, and we kind of will throw in warnings about ticks and how prevalent they are. But all of the news stories that we have seen lately indicate that it is an infestation now that is truly across North America. And as the weather has been warmer, ticks don't die off as fast as they used to, and this is going to be an incredibly difficult year for them. We're all going to be spending more and more time outdoors, and that means more exposure. Often it is our pets that get them. They often will bring them into our RVs, then we get them. And, that's kind of a mess with your pet. They have them, and it's a mess for you to get bit, but so many of them now are infected and bring in Lyme disease, which is a terrible disease, often misdiagnosed, causes lots of problems. I mean, ticks are everywhere. They're increasing in numbers. And to help us understand how serious this problem is, what we can do to prevent being infected, what we do if we do get bit, if we do find a tick, how we get them off, we'll have links on our show notes for this episode. But particularly listen up now as we interview Dorothy Leland from LymeDisease.org. Here's Dorothy.
Well, to help us understand how prevalent ticks are and how serious Lyme disease is, we're joined now by Dorothy Leland. She is with LymeDisease.org. I'll put links on the show notes for this episode so you can go to this incredibly helpful website and find out many of the things that we'll be discussing. But Dorothy, welcome, first of all, to the program.
Thank you.
So many of our listeners to this podcast travel, and they are traveling from one end of North America to the other. For a long time, we used to think that this was really an East Coast problem, but maybe you could start off by setting the reality of the situation now. It's much more than just the East Coast.
Well, it is much more than just the East Coast. There's a lot of it on the East Coast. But actually, there was a recent study by the CDC that found the kind of ticks that can carry Lyme disease are established in half of all counties in the United States, and that's all over the place. Now, it's important to know that the way they got the information was when county areas themselves did tick studies and then they reported it to the CDC. The fact of the matter is there's plenty of counties that do not do tick studies. So if half of them, have ticks, the other half doesn't mean the other half don't have them. It just means in the other half, nobody went looking for them.
So I think it's safe to assume that if we are outside in tick habitat, we better check ourselves.
That's exactly right. And I think it really starts with awareness, which this podcast should help, we hope, is that people have to even know it's an issue. Because I know that I spent most of my life being blissfully oblivious to ticks, just never paid any attention to them. And so a lot of people, for a long time, I didn't even know precisely what a tick was. And it's a little tiny bug. It's technically not an insect. It's an arachnid, which is, related to spiders. And it's a little tiny bug that can often be in grassy areas, wooded areas, any place where there's a lot of growth. And they are often on the ground, like piles of leaves on the ground. It can have nymphal ticks, baby ticks in them. And the nymphal ones can be sometimes even more of a risk to you than the bigger ones. And anyway, so they're around, and people have to know about them. And so often the adult ticks will do something that's called questing behavior. They actually go and perch on the end of a long piece of grass, for instance, waiting for their next meal to walk by. And they don't care if it's an animal or you. They just are looking. They're just looking for blood.
Let's talk about how small these things are. First of all, people think, like mosquito size. They're so small, and maybe that's the first thing that we need to educate people on.
Nymphal ticks can be the size of a poppy seed.
Wow.
If you've ever had a poppy seed bagel, there's those little tiny things on top of it. And it just, it looks like a speck of dirt. And so if you have one of those that happens to be on your leg, and your leg is also dirty, it would be incredibly easy to miss. Adult ticks are a little bit bigger. They're about the size of a sesame seed, also easy to overlook. And they kind of look like a speck of dirt. And most of us get a little bit dirty if we're out hiking around in the woods. And so, it's incredibly easy to miss. And, you know, something that apparently, you know, has evolved through the years, over the eons, for to help ticks propagate themselves, that when they bite you, they actually inject a little bit of an anesthetic. So you typically don't feel the bite.
Now,
it's painless. It's a little speck of dirt. Very easy to miss.
Now, let's talk about how, when we are outdoors in tick habitat, which is most of the country, how we should dress. So many folks I know walk around in the woods in flip-flops and shorts. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's a challenge, because particularly when the weather's hot, you know, you don't want to get all covered up. I mean, the best way is to cover up. But again, you're someplace that's hot and humid, you know, that becomes more of a challenge. If you were being, you know, totally conscientious about covering yourself, I would say the best thing would be to wear a long sleeve shirt and long pants and socks and boots and a bandana around your neck and a hat. And each of those items ideally would be treated with permethrin, which is a tick repellent that you can treat the fabric with so that you don't have to put it on your skin.
Where do you get that?
And then you would, you can get that at any outdoor store. You know, there's different brands. Insect Shield Technology is one of the brands that, you know, L.L. Bean, Ex Officio, a number of those places have, you
sure.
know, so some of them they call it Bugs Away. You know, there's different names. Any outdoor store should have that kind of thing. You can also buy a can of permethrin and spray your clothes yourself. The protection doesn't last as long when you do that. I believe they say it lasts for like 4 or 5 washes. If you spray it yourself, if you get the pre-treated stuff, it lasts like 70 washes.
And then it becomes important to check ourselves after we come in from the outdoors. Give us some hints there. Many of us are outdoors with our pets, particularly dogs, and I know they are very susceptible to ticks. So help us understand what we ought to look for and where we ought to look. And if we find a tick, what do we do?
Okay. Well, in terms of yourself, I'll get to pets in a minute. In terms of yourself, the ideal thing would be to take a shower. Now, a shower is not going to wash off an embedded tick. If there's one that hadn't embedded yet and it was just kind of hanging around, it would wash that off. But the great thing about taking a shower is it gives you easy access to check your whole body. And the idea is soap up and rub over everything, feeling for little bumps that weren't there before. And a lot of people will find something like that. If you then find it, you want to remove it, and you want to remove it carefully. And there's a lot of sort of old wives' tales that say, oh, you know, burn it with a cigarette, or, you know, dish soap, or lighter fluid, and don't do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. that can go bad in so many ways. And, you know, the recommendation is that you take fine pointed tweezers and grasp it and pull it out gently but firmly in a continuous motion. There are also tick removing gadgets that you can get, again, at outdoor stores.
I ordered some from Amazon.
Well.
I carry 3 or 4 in my RV that I got from Amazon. I think they're very $1 each or something. And you can even put them on your keychain. So. All right, now our pets,
now talking about a dog in particular, dogs can be very susceptible to Lyme disease. So obviously we don't want the dog getting sick because we love our dog and we don't want it sick. But there are also a risk to the owner, because pets can be, particularly the ones with longish hair, can really be a tick magnet. And they go running through a meadow and then they could pick up 10 ticks in a short period of time, and then they hop into the RV with you and they snuggle up to you, and maybe you've already changed out of your tick repellent clothing. And so the tick might not have even bitten the dog, but can move on over to you or get in your bedding or just, you know, you don't, you know. So it's important for pets to have tick protection. And there's a variety of products that you could get that I think would be best discussed with your veterinarian, what would be the best one to get. But that it's also important to check them for ticks and to protect yourself while you're checking them for ticks. And I think a good thing to put in the RV would be some, rubber gloves so that you would have some protection while you were going through and checking your dog with that tick device that you recently purchased, yeah. Tick removal device. And so dogs have to be checked. And now you wouldn't have them presumably in your RV, but horses can also have ticks on them and get Lyme disease. And so people that are out camping and going to have horseback riding be part of their experience, you know, that's another really serious issue.
Now, the time to check, by the way, we should point out, is as soon as you get out of the woods or before you get in your RV. As soon as you're out of that territory where those ticks may be, I know on my dog, I have almost every time we are in the woods, I will find one on him. And, usually they haven't embedded. I can usually just brush them off. And the same, sometimes it's even on me. I think of a trip we did to Cape Cod, and I was on a path. A paved path. I don't even think I was near the grass. Obviously, I must have been. And I had 3 ticks on me in a 5-minute walk. So it happens very fast.
Yeah. And what you're, I would encourage people not to wait till they're in a position to take a shower to check themselves. I mean, even it's just, as you say, just look down and see what you're wearing. Particularly, often people recommend that you wear light-colored clothes just because the ticks show up more on it. And often, if they're just on your pants, you can just brush them away.
Now,
and, so you really want to. I have talked to people, a lot of people that work in the outdoors are exposed to ticks a lot. And I remember talking to somebody that worked for a utility company, and she was saying that at one point she had parked her truck and then just had to walk over this short area to get to whatever it was she needed to do. And she said she looked down and she must have had 100 ticks on her legs, on her pants.
Yeah, it's
and so, you know, something else that I'd like to comment on is that most ticks are going to get to you low. They're going to get to you on, you talked about people wearing flip-flops. It's really important to protect your feet. And you can treat your shoes or boots with permethrin and bought at the outdoor store. And then you can have socks that have been treated with permethrin. And that right there, there's a study that just that compared people that had protected footwear versus non-protected footwear in a tick area. And whatever the result was, it was a huge percentage, of people without the protected feet got bitten by ticks. The other ones did not. Mm. And it just so, you kind of think of where it's likely to happen. And what is very common is, let's say you're walking along a path and there's, just kind of leaves and stuff like that on the path. You don't think anything about it, and there's a little bit of something. Gee whiz, you've got a speck of dirt on your boot. Who doesn't have a speck of dirt on their boot? And it's just protecting your feet with permethrin is a really good idea. Now, again, you don't put the permethrin on your skin. You right. put it on clothing.
Now, of course, the reason why is, as we said at the very beginning, it's not just that they're kind of creepy little bugs. It's that they're bugs that can make us incredibly sick. I mentioned just before we introduced you that 300,000 people, maybe more, are diagnosed with Lyme disease in the U.S. every year. How long does it typically take between a tick bite and the actual infection? Is it short, long? What should people know about that?
It varies so much. There are people that get bitten by a tick and they're sick within the day. And maybe they have a fever, maybe they, you know, they're throwing up, they're dizzy, they feel awful. Other people maybe don't show any symptoms till much later. And sometimes, for some people, it comes on incredibly fast. For other people, it's gradual. Gee, I'm sort of having this pain in my knee. I've been perfectly fine, but now I'm having this pain in my knee, and gee, it's getting worse. Lyme can manifest itself in so many different ways. And some people have, like, knee pain is a very common manifestation, but other people don't get knee pain. Yeah. But typically, it'll be that you feel like you've gotten the flu. You had a great time hiking last weekend, but gee whiz, I've got the flu this week.
And some of these effects are very long-term and chronic, are they not?
It can be if one of the difficulties is that Lyme can be hard to recognize in the early stages, but it's easiest to treat in the early stages. And so actually on our website, LymeDisease.org, we have something called a symptom checker. And somebody can go through and it will walk you through various symptoms that you might have. And if you click on it, then it gives you more information about that symptom. And when you're all done, if you want to, you can print out the whole thing and you can take it with you to your doctor as a record of these symptoms. And it can cause so many different kinds of things. But something else that is important to mention is that we're not just talking about Lyme disease. Ticks can carry all kinds of bad stuff, and you can get multiple things at the same time. You can get Lyme disease and something called Babesia, which is sort of related to malaria. Mm. There was something that was in the news just this weekend that former North Carolina Senator Kay Hagan, I believe her name is, has been in the hospital for a month with a serious brain infection, and only this weekend they announced that she had tested positive for Powassan virus, which is carried by ticks.
Wow.
And it is not, Powassan virus, blessedly, is not very common, but it's out there. People get it, and this woman's been in the hospital since before Christmas, apparently.
Well, this,
and they didn't know what it was. So, I mean, there are very serious implications to tick-borne infections, whether it's Lyme disease or something else, or Lyme disease and something else.
Well, Dorothy Leland, you have been a wealth of information. I know that this has helped a lot of people who have probably gone through, oh yeah, we heard something about ticks, but if we can get a few people to start checking, I think we will have done our job here. I'm going to link to your website. I'll send as many people as you have so many great resources, the symptom checklist, information on ticks, how to remove them, all that can be found at LymeDisease.org. Dorothy Leland, thank you for being our guest on this edition of the podcast.
Thank you very much.
And if you'd like to find all these resources, just go to the show notes for this episode. That's at roadtrekking.com/128. The interview of the week is brought to you by SunshineStateRVs.com, where every new or used Road Trek motorhome is delivered to the customer free anywhere in the country. At Sunshine State RVs, you will find the largest selection of some of the rarest and most desirable Class B RVs in the United States. They've got them all. They all undergo a 172-point inspection in which they ensure that the mechanical and manual systems are in top condition and working. Every RV they sell, all the used ones, are road tested to make sure they run and drive the way they should. They sell used and, of course, new Road Trek RVs. Here is Nick from Sunshine State RVs with what's going on this week. Hey, Nick.
Thanks, Mike. This is Nick with Sunshine State RVs in Gainesville, Florida. We have the largest inventory of Class B RVs anywhere in the country. Our top priority here at Sunshine State RVs is to provide a hassle-free experience for all of our customers. We have knowledgeable sales associates, skilled technicians that can answer your questions and help you find the perfect RV for you. Anything we can do to help, we want to do. From pick you up at the airport, buy your plane tickets, arrange transportation to your front door, anything we can do to help, that's what we do. Our buying process is very simple. Look at our inventory on our website. Call us. We'd love to answer any questions you have. You can come down and visit us, or you can choose your RV, and we can ship it right to your house. When you visit our website, you'll see our 30 to 40 used Class B RVs, and then you'll see our 10 to 15 new Road Treks that we sell. Everything's on there, 30 or 40 pictures of each. Feel free to call us anytime, ask any questions. And if you want to sign up for our newsletter, we send it out every 2 weeks. It has our newest inventory updates from new RVs to used RVs, sometimes the tip of the week. Feel free to get on our website and sign up for that as well. SunshineStateRVs.com.
News.
Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
All right, three stories for you this week. This one from the Southwest, particularly down around New Mexico way. They're getting gray wolf populations there as well. In fact, officials now saying that the wild gray wolf population in the Southwest of America is rapidly growing. More Mexican gray wolves roaming the American Southwest than any time since the federal government began trying to reintroduce the predators there nearly two decades ago. As everywhere else in the country where the gray wolf seems to be introduced and is thriving, there is a lot of controversy. But an annual survey released last week by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says there's about 113 wolves now spread between southwestern New Mexico and southeast Arizona. They say that last time they measured, there were 97 of them, so they're growing, and it's encouraging wildlife experts. But there's plans now to release two more packs of Mexican gray wolves in wilderness areas near the Arizona-New Mexico border this year. They have been talking about that. They're looking to get some public comments. It's going to be up to New Mexico to decide where, but it looks like gray wolves coming across the country again and now in the Southwest. Well, our second story is right down here near Florida and right near where we happen to be staying, not too far from the Gulf Islands National Seashore. Just east of Pensacola, there is a primitive camping place called Perdido Beach, and officials have shut it down, temporarily banned camping there. Why? Because campers were not taking their trash out. And also reports of lewd behavior on this beach. This is a gorgeous spot. And up until this week, campers could drive into a place called Johnson Beach, and then you'd walk a couple miles to a primitive camping area. And rather than bring their gear and their garbage out, a lot of campers this year have been just leaving tents and chairs and sleeping bags and air mattresses and garbage in the camping area. There have been numerous complaints about public nudity and indecent or lewd behavior. So they have shut it down. The Gulf Islands National Seashore Superintendent Dan Brown says the irresponsible actions of a few park owners has negatively affected the whole visitor experience, and so they've closed it down. And hopefully they'll be able to work with backcountry camping experts, they say, and come up with ways to manage the area a little bit better. But again, it's a case of a few ruining it for the many. Perdido Beach, a primitive area on the beach, shut down, at least until officials can figure out how to keep these idiots from ruining it. One other story has to do with Arches National Park. Beautiful place out there. They're doing, like many of our national parks, fixing up the infrastructure and doing some road work. And they are going to close the road that goes through Arches National Park at night to all traffic from March through November of this year. So if you're planning on going there, understand that the road, the main road, is going to be closed. They're rebuilding it, and it's going to have to close it. They're going to have to close it every night. And that's going to start just in a couple of weeks now and go all the way through November from about 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And it's necessary, they say, to maximize visitor and contractor safety. So it's closed to all use, including all vehicles, pedestrians, even bicycles. They will do their work during the night, so they can make it have a minimal impact on travel during the day when the park is the busiest. All the information will be posted up on their website. But that's Arches National Park. And the good news is they are fixing the road, but it's going to be a little dicey if you're going to try and use that road at night, at least for this camping season that's about to start. News of the Week is sponsored by Alde, A-L-D-E, the only name in heat that you need to know for your RV. The Alde Hydronic System brings so many great features, so many benefits. That's why a number of different RV manufacturers are now quickly bringing Alde on to their systems because the heat is so awesome. So much better than forced air, the typical forced air you find in most RVs. The Alde Hydronic System is a silent, a radiant heat. It gives you a warm, even, natural heated interior. It's great for pets and, of course, humans. Increased interior space because you're combining your hot water system and your heating, your air heating system into one. It's so efficient. The whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC. That means it will extend the life of your propane about 40% over forced air. You have all these great options that you can get with the Alde system. The one that Jennifer and I have on our Road Trek CS Adventures XL is we have the heated floors, and that is so nice on chilly mornings or those cold evenings. The floor is heated. You can pad around barefoot. It is so great. Alde, A-L-D-E. They're available now on many different manufacturers, Road Trek, some Winnebagos. When you're shopping for a new RV, say you want Alde because it is the only name in heat that you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
Well, if you do a lot of tech use, a lot of internet use, a lot of streaming use, if you're like me when you're on the road, you gobble up the gigabytes of data. Well, our pal Steve Van Dinter from Verizon Wireless has got some great news for those heavy road warrior internet users.
Hi there, Mike. Well, with your always-on-the-go lifestyle, staying connected couldn't be more important. It's how you share your story with listeners, keep up with family and friends, and no doubt stay on top of your bills. And I'm sure there are plenty of your listeners who use their mobile connection for entertainment as well as streaming radio. In fact, the average smartphone user is seeing their usage grow about 60% a year. Just think about that. Well, that's why I'm excited to tell you that if you're done with data limits, Verizon has the plan for you. Last week, we announced Verizon Unlimited, the unlimited plan you want on the network you deserve. And it couldn't be more simple. Unlimited calling, texting, and data, just $80 for a single line, or $45 a line for a family of four. The plan also comes with 10 gigabytes of free 4G LTE hotspot. After that, it's unlimited at 3G speeds. And if you roam into Canada or Mexico, no worries. Calling and texting are still free, and you can use up to 500 megabytes of 4G LTE data per day there without any charge. After that, it's unlimited at 2G speeds the rest of the day. Now, one other thing I'd like to clarify. Verizon will not throttle you on this plan. There's been some confusion. What happens is if you've already used 22 gigabytes on a particular line during your current billing cycle, and you're at a cell site that's congested at the moment, your download may be temporarily queued behind other Verizon customers. Now, this could result in slightly slower download speeds for a period of time, maybe as long as stopping at a stoplight or possibly being caught in rush hour traffic. But once congestion on that cell site clears up, you go back to 4G LTE speeds, even if you've used more than 22 gigabytes. Now, more information is available at VerizonWireless.com. With this week's Traveling Technology Tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
That's a pretty good news, Steve. Verizon is the only network I use when I'm on the road with road trekking. I do all of my podcasts sent over the Verizon network. My NBC video tapes, taped reports are sent over by the, and you know how much video demands. I have such great coverage with Verizon. It's always reliable. It's always fast. I've tried other networks, and Verizon's the one I use. Verizon, it is the best in network performance and quality. If your network is causing you to pull your hair out, why don't you switch? Get the good one. Get Verizon.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion
you probably won't find in a guidebook.
Here's Mike.
All right, our regular off-the-beaten-path reporters, Tom and Patty Burkett, are somewhere in Texas. Let's find out what they're doing out there.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. We're coming to you today from Big Bend in Texas. Not one of our most visited national parks, but not off the beaten path either. Even though this area of the Southwest is extraordinarily dry and rocky, it's not without its rewards for the sharp-eyed and patient traveler. Half an hour west of the park, you'll find a ghost town called Lajitas. During its heyday, it was home to many of the miners that worked the cinnabar mines in the area. This town, however, is known for its most famous resident, Clay Henry, who was elected mayor in 1986.
Clay Henry grew up at the Lajitas trading post while the town was a bit more lively than it is today. In his youth, he developed a taste for beer, and by the time of his election, often drank more than a case a day. When he disagreed with a constituent, he was more likely to knock the person down than engage in conversation. And he was notoriously silent on the issues of the day. NAFTA? Who cares? Immigration reform? Not my problem. Whatever the problem, the solution was always another beer. Clay Henry was a wildly popular mayor, re-elected 6 times. Clay Henry was also a goat, a billy goat, horns and all.
At the ripe old age of 23, Clay Henry was killed by his son in what many call a battle for political succession. But like another famous Texas family, the son could not quite match the father in matters of state or, in this case, beer consumption. Lajitas today is no more than a cemetery filled with unmarked graves, but Clay Henry lives on.
Ride a few miles down the road to the ghost town of Terlingua, host to the world-famous chili cook-off, and look for the Starlight Theater restaurant. This old building was once the entertainment center for the mining crews. Now it's a rollicking Western bar and restaurant with local entertainment and local food. On weekend nights, it's probably not all that different than it was in mining days. When we were there, it was full of mountain bikers who were fully enjoying a night off the trail.
But back to Clay Henry. In the far end of the restaurant, there's a stage, and both walls are covered with the work of local artists, for sale at a reasonable price. The works range from predictable to startling, and the proceeds are often going to support a good local cause, like restoring the Terlingua Church or running a summer art camp for local kids. Tucked up in a corner of the stage, wearing his signature top hat, long neck in his mouth, is the legendary goat. Some kind local craftsperson has rendered him timeless.
Terlingua is an interesting town. Though it's called a ghost town and there are many abandoned structures, there are also several thriving businesses and more than a few new homes, with more being built. If history interests you, the book Terlingua Teacher tells a lively and personable tale. The town is also a photographer's dream, both before and after dark.
If two ghost towns aren't enough, nearby you can visit Big Bend State Park, not the national park, and see the abandoned set where 7 Western films and a number of music videos have been filmed. Only the cantina remains, but it's a beautiful drive to a beautiful setting. And if you want a little late night excitement, drive on down the road to Marfa and look for the Marfa Mystery Lights. We're Patty and Tom Burkett, and we'll look for you out here somewhere off the beaten path.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Well, there are still some RV shows. The main season starts, of course, right after the first of the year. It runs throughout all of January and most of February, and then it starts to slow up a little bit in March, but we still got a bunch coming this weekend. Here's what we've got going and where they are. February 17th through the 6th through the 26th. All the way through the 26th in Indianapolis. It's the Indianapolis Boat, Sport, and Travel Show. This is the second big weekend there at the Indiana State Fairgrounds in Indianapolis. This weekend down in out in Phoenix, Arizona at the Phoenix International Raceway, it's the big Good Sam RV Super Show, February 23rd through the 26th. In Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, it's the Harrisburg RV and Camping Show at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex and Expo Center in Harrisburg. And one more, February 24th through the 26th. And this one is in Maryland, and it's at the Maryland State Fairgrounds in Timonium, Maryland, the big Maryland RV shows. For a complete list of RV shows, look at the show notes for this episode. We list them all throughout the year, and that's at roadtrekking.com/128.
America in a Class B motorhome.
This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland.
Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog.
Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking.
Well, thank you all so much for listening to this episode, episode 128. Now, we have a show notes page, and I post that on the blog, roadtrekking.com/128. So anything you want to go back and check on that you heard, you can go right back. There's a little time code with each section of the show notes. So if you want to just jump and listen to that particular section, you can do it that way as well. Hey, we are delighted that you have been with us. Please do us a favor, subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes, and let others know about this podcast. It comes out every Wednesday morning. On behalf of my wife, Jennifer, my dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendland. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next weekend out there boondocking and road trekking across North America. Bye-bye, everybody.